Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Prey Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 226 of Nerd Pride Radio.
226, February 26th, on February 26th, 346 CE, Valentinian the Great was proclaimed Roman Emperor. He reigned until 375 when, after becoming so enraged with the bad attitude of some Quadi envoys, a blood vessel in his brain ruptured, killing him quickly. That's a...
No, it's, thanks, Obamacare. No, actually, thank you to Kyle for submitting that awesome fact and saving me all of that grueling research. Wow, that was really well done.
Thank you.
Ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me. Ask me.
How are you doing today?
I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D / Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus. There's like seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be.
I'm also all of those nerds, just letting you guys know.
You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week.
With your co-hosts.
With my co-hosts, my awesome children, to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. Oh, man, as I mentioned, my co-host this week, as usual, it's Aiden. Say hi, Aiden.
Hello, yes, I am Aiden.
Yeah, well, close enough. Whatever. My guest Aiden today is Noah. He's awesome. All right, we're going to get right into the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk
Andy,
about...
Andy, your sons.
And Noah, when I talk about, we talk about whatever's been on our minds for the last week. If something strikes us as interesting during the course of my hour, busy week, we add it to the master list.
And then the best of off that list gets spewed out onto you guys every week when Dad and Aiden record.
You lucky dogs. Close enough. Oh, man, he is pushy. I have not, there's no way, we didn't do any of this. Apparently he can just read my script, so he's gonna. We're gonna get straight into this master list. My gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
Role-playing games, video games, board games, card games, any games. If it fits on his gaming table, then we're here to share it with you.
Awesome. All right. First up...
is photosynthesis.
Did we talk about photosynthesis last week or the week before?
Tell us next week.
Let us know.
It doesn't matter.
We're just going to talk about it anyway. Yeah. Because we played photosynthesis a couple weeks ago on the weekend of my birthday, and because we went down to the game store and we decided we were going to play test some stuff and hang out and then buy it if it was awesome. And it turns out we played photosynthesis and it was awesome. And now they've gotten it on order for me. So, they haven't called me yet, but I'll go down and pick it up this week, I bet.
So may I give the basics of it?
Alright, you can try. You try, and then I will belittle you and correct you and make you feel stupid while I explain it the right way. Go ahead.
Okay, you pedantic jerk.
Okay, go ahead.
Photosynthesis is if trees had brains and hated each other, so grew and tried to get the best soil when they rot.
All right, or without them having brains, it could just be that we, as the arborists, the tree planters,
are just are just shaking the trees.
Yeah, we're out there vying for the best spots and trying to block out the other people. Photosynthesis is super clever, guys. Like when we saw it at Gen Con this last year, it was the big feature game for Blue Orange Games, and I love Blue Orange Games. I mean, I've always loved Blue Orange Games. Like Battlesheep, Spotted.
Oh,
these are games
dude,
that we love.
Battlesheep, the best.
See, exactly, best game. And so Photosynthesis was the newest one from Blue Orange, and we saw the huge sign and all the attention that it was getting, and literally walked by and went, ooh, yeah, a game about watching grass grow, whatever, and then walked off. Never sat down for the demo, never watched, never tried. And I so regret it now because this game
is... It is fun! Oh. You basically gain sunlight, shadow other trees, buy bigger versions of yourself, and toss seeds everywhere.
Yeah, the idea is you have to grow trees in order to gather sunlight. Sunlight is the currency of this game. So you need to be growing trees to gather the sunlight, but then you also are harvesting those trees, which means you'll get less money for them, essentially. You have to harvest those trees eventually because harvesting them is what gets you victory points at the end of the game. And there's a balance to it that is really unique.
You have more than 6 sunlight points.
Right.
Because then, every time you have 3 not including 1, 2, and 3 points, you get victory points.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Points based on that.
Yeah,
so,
you,
like,
can, yeah you can get victory points for the extra sunlight you have built up, but it's not enough to... Not enough. It's enough to balance it out and break a tie. That's how I beat Aiden. But it's not enough to mean you don't have to harvest trees. You gotta harvest trees.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. It's this big hex board, and you're growing trees, and the sun moves around the board. The sun has 6 different positions at each point of the hex. So the sun moves around the board the entire game, and after it makes 3 full loops, you're done. And so when you set it up,
Can I also say
something? Oh, you go ahead.
So the reason why the sun moves around is so that you can shadow other trees.
Exactly. The taller your tree is, the longer the shadow.
And I call a third level tree in the center that you don't harvest for a long time the sundial because it shadows any tree that is behind it.
Yeah, if you're lucky enough to grab the center of the board and get the tallest tree,
you can seed anywhere and shadow
that
other
thing,
trees.
That has the range to shadow anywhere on the board and to throw seeds anywhere on the board. And it's clever. Because suddenly, like one round, I planted my trees, I had this whole strategy worked out, and on one round, I gathered 7 sunlight points in one round, which was, for us at least, just unheard of. And then the very next moment, the sun moves one notch over, and suddenly, almost everything I had was in shade, I got 2 points instead of 7. And so, there's a lot of plotting, thinking ahead.
And another bit of strategy that removes any chances of getting the center back once you harvest a tree is that no 2 actions can happen in the same space.
Yeah, no, that's true. That was actually, that seemed a little weird at first, but it was very clever that you can't use the same space on the board more than once in a turn, and so it kind of prevents a lot of stuff. There's a lot of strategic things around that.
So if you toss a seed from a tree, you cannot grow that tree that tossed the seed, and you cannot grow the seed.
Not yet.
And so, when you harvest a tree, you can't plant right there until next round.
That was especially funny because that was Aiden's plan, is that he harvested his tree and then immediately had another tree in position to toss a seed out there. And we both went, whoa, 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 nuh-uh, not this time. And so that means someone else gets to get into that prime
spotlight.
But anyway, the whole point, guys, is the game is really fun. It's super easy to understand. Like, even a big old dummy like Aiden, he's not here, so we can say whatever we want about him.
Yeah, he's stupid.
It's like, all of us, everybody got the game immediately. If you were playing with little kids, like, even younger and dumber than Noah, because Noah's a pretty bright guy, but if you were playing with even younger kids, I think they would catch on. And, because it's not that tough, because the pieces are gorgeous, the trees are actually, you know, tall, of differing heights, so that you can compare them, and it's easy to see where they fall on the board. And And despite being super simple, as far as catching on to it, yeah, it's going to take me forever to master this thing because you can see where, older people, you can teach the young kids to play, but they're not going to be competitive at it unless you want to go easy on them. Because there's a lot of strategy and a lot of forethought that can go into it. And, that was one of the things I was going to say. It doesn't matter. But
may I explain the shopkeep quickly?
Just a second. But what I was going to say is even for young kids, like even if they're completely outclassed, the game is just so much fun just to play it. With the pieces are so pretty and being able to go through and count all your trees and see where all the shadows of everyone's other trees fall and gather up your points and then plot out what you're going to do next. Even if you don't win, that is so much fun. I mean, it just really is just a satisfying game to play. So, very cool.
And so, another thing about the game that makes it kind of difficult is the fact that you have to buy trees.
Yes.
So, it takes like two sunlight points to go from a little tree to a big tree. Well, it costs 5 if you don't have the medium tree.
Right. Yeah, so you have to actually buy the even though you're growing the tree from small to medium, you actually have to buy the medium tree and have it in your stock so that you have it available to move up. You're spending points a lot of different ways in this game. That was the other thing I was going to say about it, is this game, Photosynthesis, and The Captain is Dead, putting those two games together as the two most recent acquisitions to my collection and more modern games. I mean, these are games that both came out in the last year and a half, maybe. And both of them are just inspiring in that everything you need to play the game is right there on the board. It's on your pieces. Like, if you know the basic rules, you don't have to refer to the rule book anymore, because once you've looked through and you go, oh, okay, that's how it all works, great. And then when you need a refresher, it's like, okay, but how much? There it is. It's right there. Okay, I need 3. All right, I got it. And both games are so well done with the visuals. Photosynthesis, in fact, barely has any numbers on it. It's just representative of, you know, there's pictures and arrows and they draw out the diagram, so it's so easy to understand what you're doing that I'm just impressed. So in my own game design stuff, as we're putting together Godball, for example, I am just inspired by this and inspired by the idea that, look, everything you need should be right there on the board. Everything you need should be, in fact, on the piece that you're working with, so that, you know, or right there on the reference, right in front of you, so that you don't have to be opening up the rule book all the time. You don't have to be going back and spending 15 minutes to find some obscure whatever. It should all just be right there.
Oh, so
and it was so cool.
One problem that I have with the game is the very competitive thinking at the beginning, because you have to place your trees on the edge of the board, and so everyone is trying to get their tree right with the sun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very difficult because it's like, here's sun. Oh, wait, next round, your tree will be shadowed. Too bad.
Yep. Yeah, well, that was a sad part. It's when we set up, that first setup and then the first move or so, it was like we weren't quite understanding the importance of some of it. And then all of a sudden we're like, oh, all right, if we had known that, we would have played this entirely differently from move one. But yeah, once you catch on, really good. So,
yeah.
All right. And then what's the other game we played this week?
This game was retaught to my dad, and I even played with my friend Tyler from school.
Yep.
Cthulhu Dice.
I played years ago at a Boy Scout camp with Aiden and Jacob. And we played Cthulhu Dice and Zombie Dice, and we had a couple other games out there that year. And we wound up playing these nonstop. It was our troop and another troop that was sharing camp space. And so, you know, we had a whole bunch of guys that would just keep gathering around. Even when it was raining, we'd get out there under the sheltered table, and we would play Cthulhu Dice in the rain, watching it fall around us. And it was a great game, but I didn't play it again until this week. But I didn't play it again, and then after a while, I forgot what the rules were, and it was just like it just kind of sat there at the back. It was just always, I pull it out, and it's, oh, we'll do Zombie Dice instead. But Noah, got all ambitious and said he was going to teach himself Cthulhu dice so he could play with his friend. And they had a blast, just the two of them. It's more fun with more people, and yet the two-player rules are pretty solid.
And may I explain the story of Cthulhu dice? Basically,
you can
what
try.
It is.
Yeah, you make it very quick, though.
You are
they don't need every detail, but...
You are cultists of Satan, try to drive each other insane.
Oh, that is pretty basic. Yeah, and Cthulhu dice is real simple. There's only, like, five symbols on the dice?
Yeah.
It's a 12-sided die.
One sends us sanity to Cthulhu. One steals us sanity from the victim, no matter which one's casting it, and we'll explain later.
Yeah, we don't have to explain. Yeah. That's fine.
There are a lot of symbols.
Yeah, one, you have to give up sanity to Cthulhu, which is the big pot in the center. One, you get to steal sanity from another player. There's one rare one that you get to return a sanity back from the center. That almost never happens. One where everybody has to give up sanity. Everyone starts with three little sanity stones, and the last person left who has any sanity is the winner. And just plays really fast, really easy.
One thing about the game is that there is a caster and a victim every round. The caster goes first and the victim goes second. That's important because the one that steals a sanity from the other person is always the caster stealing from the victim, even if the victim uses it.
Yeah, it's possible on a bad roll that you could wind up
losing your own sanity to someone else.
Exactly. But anyway, like I say, it's super simple, and the symbols are weird, so you have to take a little bit to remember which symbol is which, because, there's a tentacle, there's the yellow sign, which is three tentacles, there's an eye, but like I say, it's only five symbols to remember, and yet, it's enough that you can go around, you play a 5-minute round, even if you've got five or six people sitting down, you play a 5-minute round, and then, okay, it's done, great. Chalk down a point for him. Let's start up again. We never kept score when we played with the scouts. We were just doing it for fun. But always a good time.
And the two-player version is where you...
Sorry about that. Messages.
And in the two-player version, you actually play as two or three cults per player. And what the rules even say is sometimes the best strategy in the two-player variant is to attack your own cultists.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Sorry, I was distracted because we're making plans for what we're going to bring for food tomorrow. We got a family thing. Yeah. All right. So anyway, those were our games this week. We did Photosynthesis was a couple weeks ago, but we did Photosynthesis and we did Cthulhu Dice, and it was awesome.
Yay!
So, good stuff. What's up next? Oh!
It's the science corner.
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
And that music means that if you don't walk away right now, you might be in danger of learning something.
All right. On the science corner this week,
there is something I'd like to put in.
Okay. I've got two of them. So you want me to go first and then you can work yours in the middle?
I'll just do it right now. My dad taught me the different bases with numbers, like base 10, base 12, base 9, base 16, base 2.
Yes, we just did. Because my avatar for the boards, he's like, what is your avatar? I said, oh, that's little 12 toes.
And I'm like, who is little 12 toes?
Yeah, he just stared at me. He's like, what? So, little 12 toes is the character from Schoolhouse Rock, who teaches you how base 12 works, because apparently we did that with Schoolhouse Rock. And so then he questioned me on base 12, and so we did a whole business of it. We went through base 12 and then jumped to base 16 and then back down to some binary. It was very cool. And he caught on, and he learns well. So you got any use for it?
Not really.
Not really, but it is great to know.
Yeah.
So, all right. Then, for the science corner, I have some linguistics this week. So, I am noticing that when I'm on the phone especially, my typical exit off of the phone ends with, okay, well, we'll talk about it next week, that's great, and then it's always, bye. It's always that mumbling. It's not quite a solid mm, but it's mm by. It's all one word. Mm by. And it's, I'm not, and it's hard to do it when I'm, because when I do it naturally, I hear myself doing it and I'm like, okay, I understand that that's what I'm doing. But it's hard to recreate it because it's just so, I don't know. It's just such an instinctive thing. But I thought it was just me, but it turns out that lots of people do that. I've been hearing, now that I've noticed it in myself, I noticed that, oh.
Hey,
everybody does that, or at least everybody around here does it. I don't know about your area, but then just on one of these podcasts that I listened to, someone said they were talking about people that annoy the crap out of them, and they said, "Yeah, anyone who ends a phone call with bye," and I'm like, "Oh wow, I didn't know that was a pet peeve for people." But it's an odd evolution of this greeting or this again. Well, how would you refer to it? It's not a salutation. It's not a, it's the sign off.
It's a closure.
Closing. There you go.
Like in a letter.
And I don't know what the does. I mean, for me, I feel like it's a softening of, you know, rather than just bye, which sounds a little harsh to my ears, you soften it. Bye. Like, oh God, I'd love to stay, but see ya. You know, it's a weird. And so I've noticed a lot of that. The other one that I've noticed lately, and I do this as well, and I didn't realize that it was a thing until I started paying attention, is that it used to be that if you accidentally bumped into somebody, cut them off, or, you know, just realized, oh God, I'm in your way, sorry about that. It was just, oh, excuse me, and then you'd move on. And maybe you'd say, excuse me, and they'd go, ah, that's all right, whatever, you know. But it was just, that was, excuse me was the end of the transaction. It was, I say excuse me, and then I move on because I realized I was at fault there and didn't want to get in your way, letting you know it's not intentional. Great. But now it's always excuse me, and then the standard response is, you're fine, or no, you're fine. It's weird. Excuse me, you're fine. Like, that's like the standard call and response now.
It's as if, for it. Oh, you're fine. It was nothing.
Well, yeah, and I get why, because I do it myself. I'm reassuring the other person that, you know, they say, excuse me, and then I let them know that, oh, I wasn't upset, don't worry about it, you're fine.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's not a big deal, but you're fine. That's just the standard call and response for it now, and I don't know if that's significant, I don't know if it catches on, but I know it is a lot of people, at least in my area, doing exactly that, so... And then the last one is Noah. Not Noah. No, with a little extra emphasis.
Noah.
Yeah, it's when you're real. It's when you're being really, it's no. You add that on that little at the end. And it's for emphasis. And it's not just no that does it, it's lots of words.
I think you've already talked about this.
But.
With the stop.
Stop. Yeah, no, I have. I think I might have mentioned that.
Yeah, you have. I remember you mentioning this.
But that one is also one that, again, I didn't notice it until John McWhorter talked about it on his podcast and on Lexicon Valley. God, I don't know why it always takes me a second to pull that name. But he talked about it on Lexicon Valley and never have noticed it. And he said it is especially common right now among millennial females, in this country at least, but it's starting to spread beyond that. And the adding that little on the end of something for emphasis when you're especially excited or angry or there's an emotion behind it, that's that extra emphasis. No! And once he says it, yeah, there it is. It's on TV. It's in the people around me. It's in, oh man, you notice it all the time. So it's evolving language and linguistics, and I'm always fascinated with it, and I've just noticed some stuff, and I have nothing to say about them except that I've just noticed some things that appear to me to be new, although, as John McWhorter always points out, a lot of times they're not new. When you talk about, like, for example, the rising tone at the end of a statement that makes it sound like they're questioning you, and again, this is something that's very Californian, where everything ends in a question, and he says, no, that's not new. That's been around in this country for a few decades and in Australia since as far back as like 1955, 56 was when it was first pointed out. So, So these are usually things that it feels new, and then you find out it's actually been around for a couple of generations. It's just that we haven't noticed it yet, or we don't pay attention to it. But it's interesting. All right, and I'm going to save the other science corner that I had for next week, because we actually have a lot of material coming up, and this one is not time-dependent, so we'll catch it next time around. So instead,
it is time for Roku!
Roku! Roku used to be the box I watched all my streaming television on, and even though I watch it on my smart TV and my Blu-ray player now, I still like calling it Roku because it's so much fun to say. Can you hear him? That's how much fun it is. Seriously, every time you go to turn on your streaming television in whatever form, just shout Roku just like that. Roku! It is as if you are a samurai charging into battle and that's your battle cry. Look at that. Just saying it, it's going to kill him now. Can you hear him? I know, that was tragic. But it's really fun to say. In fact, you know what? You should buy yourself a Roku box or a Roku stick just so that you have the opportunity to say it in your own home. It's that much fun. The only reason I bring it up is that it's time for me to talk about The Orville again. The Orville is the Seth MacFarlane parody show, Star Trek parody show, where it's supposed to be a Star Trek-like comedy, so it should be like a Galaxy Quest-style comedy. And I have in the past dismissed The Orville because it seemed, you know, not quite funny enough to be, you know, from what I'm used to from Seth MacFarlane, not quite funny enough, and yet it seemed like it wasn't taking itself seriously enough, or it wasn't being funny enough, or it just didn't know where it wanted to land. And so I kind of dismissed it after watching 2-3 episodes. I let it go. But my friend Pat, also known as DM Darks, and how awesome is DM Darks?
So awesome.
So awesome. And my friend Pat pointed out that, no, here's the way to view this show. Watch it as if they are role players at a table and they are trying to play a game of Star Trek or a Star Trek ripoff, and they're doing it using Pathfinder rules. And so.
So Starfinder?
Starfinder rules, yes, that's what he said, but I just misquoted. And so, as they get into the game, it's like, you can just see them realizing that, you know, because they're all joking around and they're making this funny, but then it's like, oh wait, my character can do this, hold on. So, and especially he pointed out the episode where, we discover that Bordas can eat anything. And so, it's as if the player just looked at his sheet and said, wait a minute, I can do what? What's this digestive thing on my sheet? Seriously? All right, hold on. Hand me that. Let's find out. Oh, you know, a cactus? Yeah, sure. Let's do that one. Okay. And so it's like that. So on Pat's recommendation, I went back to watch it, and sure enough, I could get that feel from it. And now I have watched it enough that I've got some investment in some characters. But here's what it is. I realized it's not a comedy. This thing, because it comes from Seth MacFarlane and because it's a Star Trek ripoff, style thing. It was looking like it was supposed to be a farce, a parody. It's supposed to be this Seth MacFarlane style comedy, just riffing on Star Trek. And it's not really, it's a comedy in as much as, you know, The Avengers was a comedy movie. The Avengers had a lot of funny moments in it. Really, I mean, really cute. Some of them laugh out loud moments. But in general, except for Guardians maybe, and maybe the last Thor movie, they're not outright comedies. They're action movies that have funny bits in it. Well, this is the same way. This is a Star Trek TV show, except it's got some occasional funny bits in it. And more particularly, it is, if you watch it, take it seriously. Watch it as, oh, this is what Star Trek would have been like if all the characters were allowed to be human in and not as in no alien races, but as in allowed to be human, as in allowed to have human flaws and foibles, that they're not perfect people. They are screwed up and they have relationship issues, and sometimes they do the wrong thing because they're being selfish about something, or because they're, you know, forget, blinded by their lust in some instances or whatever. And it is fascinating. Right, it's not a, oh, I'm sorry. Am I talking too much?
Yeah.
I'm Hurry sorry. Up. Am I talking too much on my podcast? It's your fault for not watching this show with me.
Oh, come on. At the time you watched.
Fine, you want to talk about Brooklyn Nine-Nine again?
Oh my goodness, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, let me tell you.
We just watched the latest episode where
And it was so funny because...
Don't give away anything. Okay, they may not have watched it yet. It just came out in the last week or two. But it's
hilarious.
Jake and the captain cooperating on an interrogation, and it's just really funny.
Trying to get information out of a guy.
It's really funny.
Yeah.
We had a blast. But the Orville is, it's odd because it's Star Trek The Next Generation, except again, the people are allowed to be really flawed. And there's something very human about it. And it's entertaining. It's got me hooked. I'm like, actually, I'm for the first time compelled to watch it. So I'm going to get all the way through it. It's not one where I have to stay up all night and watch all the episodes because I have to see what happens, but I'm very entertained. And a lot of them that'll come up and you'll go, wow, okay, that's cheesy. Yeah, whatever. But let me tell you what, with some cosmetic differences, maybe any episode so far of The Orville absolutely could have been an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. Every single episode would have fit perfectly into, TNG canon. I mean, there's no reason that they couldn't or wouldn't have done any of these if they needed to make a comment on, modern mass media culture, which they didn't 30 years ago when The Next Generation came out. But if they wanted to comment on Facebook culture, then this is the episode they would have made. And it's very, very sincere and very real. I mean, Seth MacFarlane clearly is a huge Star Trek fan, and he's trying to be loyal to that. And, it's simplistic in its writing at times, and they go as cheap as humanly possible. I mean, you remember my rant a couple of weeks ago about how much I don't like it when all the aliens seem to be just humans with, like, plastic pieces glued to their faces? Man, they go way overboard with it here. In fact, there's one planet where they land and they start talking about parallel evolution. I'm like, oh, you're finally going to explain why all the alien races seem to look almost exactly alike except for minor cosmetic differences. No, this was a case of parallel evolution where the people looked exactly like humans. Exactly. And in fact, not only did they look exactly like humans, but their culture was exactly like human culture of the 21st century so that they could talk about Facebook. I mean, it was like so close. They go to a coffee shop to get an overpriced coffee that comes in a Starbucks cup. I mean, it doesn't have the Starbucks logo on it, but it is, they literally changed nothing except to cover up product names. That was it.
It's as if the human race was narcissistic and designed all other races.
Yes, it's exactly what it's like. It's as if the Bible's right and God really did create man in his own image, and he looks exactly like us. That's why he created them exactly like that on every other planet. It's the only possible explanation. So, anyway,
this
may sound like it's a hesitant recommend. Maybe it is, but I'm enjoying it. And it was worth going back for a rewatch, and I'm glad I did. So thank you, Pat. You're so awesome. Okay, that's it. Let's get on to some fingertips.
Fingertips, fingertips, fingertips.
Hey, so there's going to be a new TV show on YouTube called Cobra Kai. And it is a continuation of The Karate Kid, 34 years later, using the same cast, or at least they've got Ralph Macchio to play Daniel LaRusso, and they've got whoever the big bully was on the other guy, the other side, the tall blonde bully guy, who he was every 80s bully, and he's back to play his character. So they are both reprising their roles, and Cobra Kai is actually the story of the bully, and it is him after that match, and he never regained his self-confidence, and he's spiraled into alcoholism.
And it turns out the Karate Kid's just a jerk.
And it turns out the Karate Kid is just an ass. He's a used car salesman, and he's this smarmy, cocky twerp of a... he's terrible. Oh, yeah. Isn't this the guy whose ass you kicked? No, it was his face I kicked. I mean, like, right to him. They're making him out to be a total dick. Whoever the blonde guy is, I wish I had written his name down. I thought I would remember it. But he is going to be the protagonist of this story, and he has decided he's going to put together a new Cobra Kai dojo, and he's going to start teaching kids how to defend themselves. And yeah, he's being kind of a dick about it. I mean, he's still using the Cobra Kai mentality, but you can see where this thing is going to go. Is that over the course of a season, he's going to learn some lessons about himself, and he's going to learn from these kids, and there's going to be some real emotional growth going on here. While in the meantime, Daniel LaRusso, our villain, is driving by in his big fancy car. Cobra Kai? What? They're opening a dojo? Not in my town. So he's going to be the bad guy trying to shut down the youth center. And our heroes are going to have to find some way. Anyway, this just looks entertaining as crap. I hope this thing is good. And look, I'm not going to pay for YouTube Red. So, you know, I'll probably only ever get to watch the first two episodes. You know, maybe someday down the road, I'll take YouTube up on a free trial and spend a week watching all the back episodes and then cancel my free trial. Who knows? But anyway, I'm really hoping this thing is good because it has so much potential. I think this is really smart. But here's the thing. Just as this is why it's a fingertip is I didn't really want to talk about how much I'm looking forward to the Cobra Kai TV show. I just had this weird moment where I went to my forums and I posted up and said, hey, look, they've got a Cobra Kai TV show. How cool is this? And then I said, wow.
Can I quickly explain the story that you told me?
I don't know. Well, you know, no, okay, the story that I told you is the story that I'm telling now. And
oh, okay.
Yeah. So I said, hey, look, here it is. And then I mentioned because we had my brother and I, when we had our Animal Ball podcast, the Animal Cast, years ago, we had done, as one of our final episodes, we had done the Cobra Kai podcast, where we came on as members of the Cobra Kai dojo, and we basically acted as if Cobra Kai were the heroes of the Karate Kid movie, and then we proceeded to do our top five heroes of all time, basically listing off villains from all of our favorite movies, talking about how they were the greatest heroes, and why does every movie have to end in tragedy? The good guys never seem to win. That's it. Okay, that was our bit. And so I posted this up on my forums and said, wow, the Animal Cast was so prescient. And now prescient is a word that I don't ever use. I don't even know why it came to my mind, but it suited right here. And I always, by the way, I pronounce it prescient, but when I was looking it up for this podcast, even though I say prescient because I've never heard it said out loud, I've only ever read the word, I found out that I think it's supposed to be pronounced. Sorry. You all right? All right.
No.
He's good. You're fine. I think it's supposed to be pronounced prescient, and it's a word that I never use, so that was, I just noted to myself that it was weird that I was using it, but okay, whatever. And then I went back, and I listened to the Cobra Kai podcast that my brother and I had done 10 years ago, and in listening to that, right in the middle of that podcast, for some odd reason, I used the word prescient in that podcast. Like a word that I would swear I've never used before in my life. And then there it was. And again, in the podcast, I pronounced it prescient. But again, I think it's prescient. I wouldn't know for sure. Either way, it's that word that looks like prescient. So there you go. It was just an odd moment. Doesn't mean anything. Next up on fingertips, the number 91. I've decided, I know I've always told you guys that 23 is my favorite number, but today, my wife needed $45. She's going to a baby shower and she has to pay somebody back for half of a gift and anyway, she owes her sister some money. So she said, I need $45. So I went to the bank. I got some cash. I spent a little bit on some, coffee and drinks and stuff on my way home. And so when I got to her, instead of handing her $45, I said, hey, here's $91. And then that way, you know, she can have some at school for when, you know, teachers come around collecting for stuff or whatever. And so I said, here's $91. And, hold on just a second. And I'm back. So anyway, I handed her the $91. And as I did, I thought, wow, 91, I love that number. 7 times 13, that is a great... And I realized that, no, you know what? I think 91 may be my favorite number. I think, because, man, I don't know, something about 91 just feels really good. I enjoy that. So, sorry, 23, you're still... I'm very fond of you, but, yeah, 91 really appeals to me. I can't help it. So, probably because that's how old I'll be when I die. That's my guess. So, otherwise, I mean... other than, you know, my psychic visions of my own death, why else would I have a favorite number like 91? Makes no sense, right? Okay. Next up, Instant Pot. All right. I don't think I've talked about Instant Pot on the podcast, but I have talked about it on the forums. And my brother has gotten an Instant Pot, and Yancey has gotten an Instant Pot. And they love doing their pressure cooking stuff, and they brag about it all the time and how awesome it is. And my brother has even been posting up pictures of the very cool meals he makes. And I'm so jealous. And so, and my wife even brought it up before all of that, and because someone at work had told her how awesome these pressure cookers were and said, wow, we really need to get one of these. And so I think her plan was to get me one for Father's Day. But we didn't get to that point, because now I got home this week, Wednesday, I think, and there was an Instant Pot on my doorstep from Amazon. And I thought, wow, did Lisa order an Instant Pot? Because she usually has everything shipped to school so that she'll be there to receive it. But here it is on my doorstep, and so I bring it inside. I open it up. Sure enough, it's an Instant Pot. And it just says, to Mike and Lisa Jones, which is not how things get shipped to us from Amazon, from our account, but it says, to Mike and Lisa Jones, and then that's it. There's no packing slip inside. There's no information on who sent it to us. There's no nothing. And I verify with my wife that, yeah, she didn't send it. So I immediately blame my mom. So I call my mom. Nope, wasn't my mom. And in fact, she's pretty sure it wasn't anyone in our family. And my wife checked with her family. It wasn't anyone on her side. So now I'm left with a mystery. Who knows that I want an Instant Pot and has that kind of money to burn? And really likes me well enough that they would get it, presumably because my birthday was only a week before, so we could call it a birthday gift, maybe? So, you know. So who could it possibly be? And I had a list of suspects, but ultimately... I think it was Phoebe. She won't verify this for me because she just plays coy about it and she doesn't really answer things. But I think it was Phoebe. And either way, if it was Phoebe, you're amazing. You're amazing and awesome. You are so cool because I'm so excited. And here's, and if it wasn't you, well, that's all right. You're still awesome and cool. And whoever did send it to me, man, I so appreciate this. You really shouldn't have. Man, this is way too much, but I'm keeping it.
And by the way, Phoebe, this also includes you. It was way too much.
Yes, it was too much to spend on me, but again, I'm keeping it. This thing is great. So, I sadly haven't used it yet. We are, weirdly, compulsive about our menu, and so the next things that came up on the menu just happened to be stuff that were not Instant Pot conducive. We had T-bone steaks that we were grilling, so nothing to throw in the Instant Pot. We had a tater tot casserole, which I don't know that browning hamburger... Well, you could use the sauté function, I suppose, to do the browning of the hamburger. But yeah, so the two meals that we've had since we got the Instant Pot that came off the menu... just were not conducive to Instant Pot cooking. But I did break the whole thing out today. I checked all the functions. I think, since it's just me and Noah here at home, I think I'm either going to throw in some mac and cheese or maybe do like some black beans and rice, something like that. Just throw in something that we can just cook in like 9 minutes and just test out the Instant Pot and see what we think of it. So that's what we're going to do with it. But we just haven't quite gotten to it yet. But anyway, I will continue to share stories because... from everything I've heard, Instant Pot is amazing. I'm looking at these recipes. Like, I throw in my roast, and an hour later, I have tender, succulent, awesome, cut-it-with-a-fork roast? Are you serious? In an hour? I'm so excited. So, well, it's an hour, and then throw in your cut-up vegetables, and then, like, another, you know, 10, 15 minutes. This is crazy talk. Crazy. I can throw in an entire bag of frozen chicken breasts and have them perfectly cooked in like 10 minutes? Oh my God! This is the best for those days when we get home from work and it's 5:30 now and we look around and we go, oh God, no one pulled any meat out last night. Jesus, we got nothing. We got nothing. So now to prevent us from either eating frozen pizza or fast food, we can just throw some crap in the Instant Pot and boom, dinner. This is so cool. So I'm really looking forward to it. I will report back. You know I'm going to report back because I love my food and I love cooking. This is going to be great. And then the last thing is, oh, well, this isn't really, I don't know that you guys will care, but I'll post up some pictures when we get it. We just ordered a new cat tree and we're super excited because we like our old cat tree. Our old cat tree is like 5 foot tall, got a lot of platforms, and.
But it's broken!
And every cat that comes here loves it. Well, okay, the top is just a little wobbly, that top platform, when they jump up and down from there. It's a little wobbly, but I think, we just need to wedge something underneath the one thing there and then we tighten it down. Should be fine. And it's got, they've clawed the rope off of one leg, so we have to rewrap the one leg. But I think we're going to disassemble this one, rewrap that leg, fix the top, and then we're going to give it to Jacob so that Godot will have a cat tree in his home.
And then we'll have one that may not have a hammock, so Raven won't like that, but it will have a lot of hidey holes.
Yes, and it's, so we're buying an even bigger one because, Amazon has this. It's 6 foot tall. The thing is absolutely gigantic. And it's got, you know, three tall platforms to get up to. It's got, two boxes to hide in. It's got stairs and other stuff hanging. And it's just super cool. And we got on Amazon for $69. 69 dudes. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Man, well, I'll post up some pictures once we get the cat tree going because, the cats are going to love this. So, all right. Then that's it. That's all I got for fingertips. Did you have anything?
Nope.
All right. Do you know what time it is?
It's time for the pod-o-matic.
Hot dog.
This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-o-matic. At the end of every cat. As I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Podomatic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for us to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you, and sometimes me, come in. You want to hear me, hear us haver on about something? Send your question or topic to us by email, or better yet, a private message on our forums, and we'll add it to the Podomatic list. Podomatic is about whatever you want it to be.
That was awesome, dude. You're completely out of breath now. That was really good. And our first number is 86. 86 is from... Oh, there it is. Hey, I did open the list. I even updated it, added some new people. This is great. And hey, for the rest of you, Kyle and Ronster. Ronster and Noah look so much alike. It's so easy to get them confused.
Gosh dang it, Dad.
So, Kyle and Ronster are still dominating the list. They own about 2/3 of it. But the rest of you, send me some stuff. I mean, yes, yeah, you can't really compete with Ronster right now, but you can kind of force Kyle down a couple of notches. So, and that's always worth your time, right? All right. So the first one. Oh my God. It's from Noah. Noah.
Yes. For El Grappadoro. Who is your arch nemesis?
All right. So, El Grappadoro is my,
Mexican wrestler.
My luchador personality. I'm the guy behind the mask.
He's
for El Grappadoro.
The mailed stapler.
I am El Grappadoro. The stapler. So.
The main stapler.
Noah would like to know who is El Grappadoro's arch nemesis.
Please be my luchador. Please be my luchador.
Well, I don't know about that, Noah, but, Grappadoro's nemesis, El Grappadoro. His nemesis is El Mono en Llamas.
That's me!
That is you! What does El Mono en Llamas mean?
The ape on fire or the monkey on fire. Ape and monkey are apparently the same word in Spanish.
Therefore, you wouldn't have to argue about it. So, how about that? Yeah, monkey on fire. How can you argue with that? I would like to say chimp on fire, but still.
Quickly,
any great ape on fire would be great.
Can we just use the translate that we have open right now to see what it would be?
What, chimp?
Yeah.
All right, hold on.
The chimp on fire.
Let's find chimp. Just chimpanzee. Or it's chimpanzee. if you want to put a Mexican accent. I suppose.
Chimpanzee.
Because it's got the little accent over the E.
No,
so.
I'd rather do ape.
Yeah.
Because it's just better.
El mono en llamas. Yeah, I like that one much better. All right. Yeah, so here's the thing. We went to go look it up, and I'm like, looking, okay, it's mono en llamas? And, oh, wait, or is that llamas? I think the double L is pronounced llamas. And Noah has to go, they have a speak button right there. Oh, yeah, they do. Okay, cool. So, that's pretty good. 38 is from
38 person.
Oh no, you only do it when it ends in 9.
Oh.
Yeah. Sorry, don't need to give away the secrets, but alright, hold on. 38 is aha. It's from Ronster. Not a surprise. Ron, who do you think has been the best president and why?
I have an answer.
Okay, go ahead.
President Blub Blub.
Who was President Blub Blub? I don't remember that one.
He was our first fish president with his best inauguration speech. Blub,
blub, blub. Nice. The best president? That's really hard to say.
Whichever one said the least stupid stuff.
Look, Lincoln was a flawed man, but he did keep the Union together, and he brought us through a very difficult time as a nation. And so I have a lot of respect for that. Thomas Jefferson is one who, as a Renaissance man, a polymath, I've always had a lot of respect for Jefferson, but also, morally, here's a man who wrote about, our freedoms and our rights as human beings, and yet kept slaves, had sex with his slaves, Sally Hemings. Yeah, he very famously had an affair with one of his slaves, which is really, really immoral because she is his property and therefore has no right to say no or yes for that matter. And so even if she agreed to it, even if she seemed to be a willing participant, she's not capable of offering that. So therefore, it's technically rape, no matter how you dice it. But again, this is a guy who... That's a lot to dump on a 12-year-old, isn't it? So
I'm changing the subject right now.
It's a guy who had some moral issues.
81.
Well, hold on. I don't want to end this on feeling like I'm justifying Thomas Jefferson. I don't want it to sound like I'm justifying Thomas Jefferson's
racism. I'm sorry,
racism.
That was Thomas Jefferson?
Yes.
Oh my goodness!
I know. And so, while he did some amazing things before our country was founded, during the founding of our country as president, he did really amazing things. He also had these morally questionable things in his background, and I don't want to excuse those because he recognized that they were problematic, and apparently talking about them was the best he could do to come, you know, to resolve them. He couldn't actually take any action, but he could recognize that, wow, this is problematic. Well, you're going to stop? Well, no, but I mean, I understand it's problematic. Does that get me credit? Yeah, it doesn't really. So I'm not going to put him up as my favorite president or best president. Lincoln's a nice, easy choice. I'm going to stick with Lincoln for now. Anyway, Noah has re-rolled for me and it is an 81.
Jefferson is not the guy I thought he was.
I didn't mean to disillusion you. I'm sorry, kiddo.
Fine, but still.
This one's from Kyle. Kyle says, Noah, for the rest of your life, you're going to emanate the overwhelming smell of what type of food? What food will you smell like forever?
I'm going to smell like chip beef on toast because I just love it and want to smell it all the time.
That is a great option. Yeah, I am telling you, chip beef on toast. The kid has never had it before in his life, apparently. And I made it for him. It's your poor people's meal. It's the cheapest thing you can possibly put together. And Noah is so in love with it. So yeah, this menu I mentioned, his pick comes around. It's like, all right, Noah, what do you want to put on there? Chip beef on toast. All right, cool. You got it, man. So that's what we're having
in
5 days.
And then at one point, I think the thing was, it was my meal, and you picked for me, and I knew you picked well because it was chipped beef on toast.
Because you had told me repeatedly, next meal I get, it's going to be chipped beef on toast. Do I get a meal yet? No, it's not your pick. You've still got a meal on there. All right, well, my next one's going to be chipped beef on toast. So when it came open, I put it down for him. I checked with him. I said, is that all right? I said, yeah! So, of course, it was all right. 13 comes from... There it is.
Oh, no, we're going to die.
It's from Walrus.
Just because of the number, not because of the person. I bet Walrus is an awesome person.
But if you multiply it by 7, you get 91, my favorite number.
Oh, true.
So Walrus says, if we were to take society out of being capitalist-driven, no more money or working for a wage, basics provided, what do you think that would look like? Oh, dude. There's a compromise somewhere in here that, yes, it would be so great to have everything provided for us. It would be wonderful if, you know, from each according to his ability to each according to his need, his or her, we should update. If that was possible, so that everyone would work their hardest for the betterment of all, and then everybody shares equally in the spoils of society and culture and advancement, and thus, everyone has the ability to be creative and spend their times in other pursuits, and you know that would be wonderful and idyllic, but it doesn't work that way.
But actually, the problem is that if you work a world like that, if basics are provided, people will just sit on their bums.
Yes, a lot of people would, or a lot of people would decide that there are certain difficult jobs that it's not worth doing because, well, why would I risk my life, or why would I put myself in danger, or why would I do something so mind-numbing and horrifying when, you know, I could do something else and still wind up getting everything I need taken care of, you know?
Well, if that doesn't happen, then the world could end.
Well, and so the point is that there have to be incentives for people to do some things.
Yeah.
The problem is that there has to be a balance so that, yes, we have to provide incentives, and capitalism has generally provided those incentives, but there has to be a balance so that capitalism doesn't run amok and that it doesn't get to the point where your freedom to use your money however you want can't be used to force other people to suffer, to put yourself in a position of power over others where you are completely intractable because of your inherited wealth. Yes, I believe we should provide for everyone.
Quickly.
But I also believe that we need incentives to keep people doing the things that drive society forward. And so there's a balance there that, we are, as the United States of America, I feel we are way too far on the capitalist side of things, but I don't know exactly where the right line is, so it's hard for me to say what that looks
quickly,
like. Oh, yeah?
If I were to run this question my way, I would have it be capitalist, so you'd have food and water and housing freely.
Okay, that's not capitalist. That's the opposite of capitalist.
What do you mean?
Oh, all right. To explain, capitalism is the spending of money, the use of money for private ownership of things, being allowed to use your money to make more money. Capitalism is commerce in general. And socialism, or one version of socialism, communism, socialism is where the government owns some of the means of production or all of the means of production. The government determines how people can run their businesses and how they can spend their money. They determine...
Oh, out of being socialist-driven.
Right, yeah, away from being capitalist-driven. Yeah, this is not something you've covered a whole lot in social studies yet.
I'd have it where food, water, housing, free. But if you want to have such comfortings as TV, you got to work to get some money.
Okay.
To just to get those.
But what about internet? Because can you really... Is it possible to get through school and compete with all the other kids if you don't have internet available to you? I mean, are we getting to a point in our society where internet is really kind of a necessity? You really kind of have to have it. If you don't have access to the internet, then there's a lot of things you can't do and can't learn. A lot of parts of the educational system and a lot of parts of our society you can't participate in. So, you know, should we provide internet to people? You know, should it be free or should it be subsidized if people can't afford it? Should it, you know, this is a hard question.
Yeah.
So, me and Noah are going to sit down. We are going to hammer out an answer and we will have a solid plan to submit to the president
right
by
now.
Next week. You got it?
You have the lowest current working computer. If you can't pay for it.
No.
You'd have a slower version of our current computers.
See, internet. Okay, but then they still can't really compete because they get the slowest and the worst. I mean, look, what happens to you when you go to school next year?
I'll get a free computer that is school provided.
Yes, you will have a school provided computer that you can bring home with you, that you can use to study with, and they put lots of locks and protections on it. They monitor usage so that, you know, it's not like kids are out there playing games on it or looking at porn or anything. I mean,
I was thinking that, and especially not the naughty stuff.
Right. You can get to some game sites. There are some places where you can go out and play games on those machines.
But, unblocked at school.
Yeah. But your school provides you with a laptop to make sure that you have, and while you're at school, you have internet access. Now we have Wi-Fi at home and you can connect here. But some kids don't have that. So.
Every house would be provided with Wi-Fi, of course.
Well, and there are actually a lot of cities that have been, talking about, at least cities in the U.S., there's cities around the world that do this already, but, there are cities in the U.S. that are working on a public Wi-Fi system so that if you don't have a, secure, fast, internet connection in your own home, anywhere in the city, you can pick up on the city Wi-Fi. And it may not be as secure and it may not be as fast, but at least you can have a connection no matter where you are. So,
yeah.
You know, that is a possibility. But anyway.
Or you just do everything in the Oasis and everything's fine.
See, there you go. This one is 01.
All right.
01.
Oh, come on, Ronster.
01. It comes from Ronster.
219 stinking Podomatics being placed in, so that he's always one third of the list.
Look, I know that you're mad at Ronster because he killed your dog, but
no,
you've got to get over this, buddy.
It's just that Ronster sent you 219 Podomatics, and now you're adding
so
them
thankful.
Just so that he can always be one third until you're out of
right,
them.
Right. So he's always, so he doesn't, it's not like he's, you know, 90% of the list, but yeah, he's going to get one out of three questions until he runs out.
I know you are a super duper Star Wars fan, but could you please spell the name of Chewbacca's species? No pressure, just your Star Wars nerd cred on the line. W-O-O-K-I-E.
W-O-O-K-I-E. E.
Wait, two E's?
Yep.
Hold on, look it up.
All right, now let's go look it up.
Wait, and then also look up Chewbacca's son's name.
Chewbacca?
Race.
Ooh, Chewbacca race car. All right.
Oh, no. You know what? I wouldn't like
Chewbacca
it.
Race. Yep. A legendary Wookiee warrior, W-O-O-K-I-E-E. Very good.
Now Chewbacca's son.
And, all right. And Chewbacca's...
Chewbacca's son.
Son.
Oh, wow, it actually
said... Yeah, if you say Chewbacca's, the first suggestion is son. Oh, their son, Lumpawaru.
Lumpy. That's the name. At one point in at the laser barn, someone got a gun called Lumpy, and anyone that saw something that... This YouTuber called JonTron posted up about the Star Wars holiday special. Well, we're like, hey, that's the name of Chewbacca's son.
Yeah, this is how my kids know about the various media and TV shows, whatnot, of my youth, is that they pick them up through nostalgia shows on YouTube, where they've never actually seen, as my kids, they've never actually seen the Star Wars Christmas special, but they know pretty much every relevant thing about it, so.
And according... Was it awful?
I've never seen the whole thing. I didn't watch it when it was on TV originally.
But
Lumpawaroo, that's his son's name.
There was even a fake thing for an item in like a guide manual for it, a Star Wars item thing, like a computer thing.
Oh, I don't know anything about that one.
94.
94 comes from...
Wait, hold on, can I say it because it has a 9 in it?
No. No, it has to end in 9.
Dang.
Like 69, dude. 94 is from Kaz. Hey, Kaz. All right.
If you could change one event in history, but you can't return to your present, what event do you want to change? This might be easy.
Yeah?
Personally, if I were alive and a president did something super stupid that caused like another world war, yeah. I would change the event in history where they became president and go with the other candidate.
Okay, but what about going back in time and just killing Hitler and preventing the last world war?
Actually, want to know what I'd do?
What?
I'd just make it so that Hitler wasn't evil.
Oh, so you'd go back when he was a kid and you'd befriend him and talk really good about his artwork that was so crappy and make him feel better about himself so he didn't turn into such a bitter old prick?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably a good plan. Although, in the TV show Future Man, they went back to, instead of trying to murder the bad guy as a baby, they went back to try and change the course of his life, and it never works out the way you want it to. That's the worst part is, look, yes, Hitler was evil. Hitler was super evil and terrible, but also the world was really screwed up at the time, and after the way we dumped on Germany following World War I and everything else that happened, I always wonder what would have happened if someone actually went back and killed Hitler as a baby. What happened if Hitler just happened to never have been born? There was never a Hitler. How would those pressures in Europe and around the world, how would those pressures have resolved themselves?
I have a question.
Come the 1930s, had Hitler not been the steam valve for that. Would it have continued on as it was for like another 10 years before, you know, it all wound up releasing itself in some other horrible way? I mean, I can't imagine that it would be as bad as what we had.
I have a question.
But who knows what would have arisen. That's good. What's your question?
If we were to choose an event where we might be around or will be around before we die, are we also taking care of the time-space paradox of what would you do with two U's in the world?
No, you know what? As far as I'm concerned, it depends on how time works. As far as I'm concerned, there's no problem with having two U's. You go back in time, and you change whatever event you're going to change, and then if you happen to live long enough to meet yourself...
Tell him not to do something that was really embarrassing and do a twofer.
Yeah, because at this point, yeah, there is the possible paradox that possibly you would run into yourself, and what if you did something that then can change the course of your own life so that you never got to where you were going to go back in time in the first place, then how could you have gone back in time to change it if you changed it so that you never went back in time? You know?
Yeah, that actually is a problem.
Or for that matter, let's say we went back and killed Hitler, or went back and changed the course of Hitler's life so that he never became the Führer and he wasn't evil. But you've somehow prevented World War II in the fashion that it happened, and now the events of the world play out in a completely different way. And the millions upon millions upon millions of people who died during World War II did not die in that fashion. And instead, you know, regardless of what happened, things played out very differently afterwards.
Quickly,
you're not even born then. And even if you were born, why would you have any reason to go back and change Hitler's life? Because Hitler was a nobody.
I was just about to say that this question creates a paradox in every way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no matter how it plays out, it creates a logical paradox.
Because if this event never happened, then we wouldn't have ever had to go back in time. But then it would have happened.
Right.
But then it would.
Exactly.
It would just repeat that.
Exactly. And so therefore, I, Man.
It's all just right, like the statement is false.
10. 10 is from... There it is. 10 is from Ronster again. Hey, Ron.
Gosh dang it. No matter Ron, where we Ron, scroll, there's a Ron.
Ron, don't listen to him. I love you, and I think you're wonderful.
I mean, yeah, he's son, a good guy, but still, there's just too many Rons.
You can never have too much Ron.
Ron questions.
If you had been tasked to carry the One Ring of Power to Mordor, could you have done it? So instead of Frodo and Samwise, it was you and any one of your friends. And you pick whichever friend you want, whichever one you think is the strongest of will, the most loyal, the one who could be your Samwise to go with you.
Could I just have... Wait, hold on. I'm going to make it so that it's not so that it's not all the... Not going to be any... all the halflings are one of my friends, and I... probably take Jackson with me, because he's just a good guy.
Alright, but could you do it?
Judging on our current state, probably not.
Yeah, look, I have no doubt that if I was carrying the One Ring of Power to Mordor, I do not have the will to fight it. So, hey, Train! Hi, Train. I don't have the will to resist it. It would overpower me, and the Ring Wraiths would have found me right at the beginning, and they would have flown the ring back to Mordor themselves, and the whole world would have ended. So don't rely on me. The hobbits are a very special case. Even if I were a hobbit, I wouldn't have been that hobbit. Unless you gave me Samwise to travel with me, maybe, because Samwise is the real hero of that series, and maybe Samwise could have gotten me through it.
Could I actually
because
take,
Frodo was weak.
Could I actually take the ranger from the Shadow of Mordor series with me, because he can't die, and if he had the ring... then it would all be okay.
Would it, or would he be corrupted by it?
In the Shadow of Mordor series, he actually has the ring and uses it to turn the orc or Uruks against.
Oh, that's how he does that. That's how he does that mind domination thing.
Yeah, he just shoves his hand onto their face and then.
I've never played Shadow of Mordor, so I wouldn't know. So
yeah,
but yeah, no. What I'm saying is, sending me with the Ring of Power is a bad idea.
What if we sent Bear the undefeatable?
48.
His cuteness even makes the Ring Lords want to pet him, and that he's.
I'm sorry. Are you? Yes, did you just say you're tying the ring to our cat's tail and sending him off into a horde of orcs?
Listen! I'm saying that if our cat were in a humanoid state, but still in a cute enough fashion, like a house elf from Harry Potter size, and he still purred when we pet him, then no one could resist his adorableness, even the Ring Lords, and not even Sauron.
Alright. 48 is from Mrs. Darks. And Mrs. Darks says, have you ever OD'd on caffeine?
What does that mean?
Have you ever overdosed on caffeine?
No, but,
no, you haven't.
But, but if we're saying caffeine, can I count a certain event using caffeine to get... watching television was practically a caffeine for my birthday last year because I just sat in the room watching TV.
Yeah, no,
until morning.
That doesn't count.
I know, but still, it was like I had too much caffeine.
Yeah. The correct answer for me is, yeah, I have OD'd on caffeine before. It was in college. We went to Perkins. We were supposed to be studying, but we wound up talking all night, and I can't even remember who was with me, but I wound up going through 11 pots of coffee. That night. I was with someone who was drinking tea, I think, so they didn't even have any coffee. I had 11 pots of coffee myself, so I peed a lot, and I had way too much caffeine, and by the end, I can't even remember the details. I just remember the number 11. I remember that I had 11 pots, and I remember that it was a bizarrely broken, altered state of consciousness, so that I mean, you know, it's not like I lost my mind. It's not like, but it was just, almost like Fry entering that state of oneness after 300 cups of caffeine, 300 cups of coffee on the one episode of Futurama. I can relate to that. It felt like that, except it wasn't really in slow motion.
Dad?
I was just kind of a spaz.
Soon?
So, it was 30 years ago. So, I don't remember it viscerally like that, but I do remember that it happened. So.
Soon, can we just have like a 30-minute break just to get more listener betrayal?
No. You know what? In fact, I think we're about done. I think,
okay.
Yeah, we're at an hour 15, so it is time to wrap up. So,
what's my GLaDOS recap the episode?
There you go. We don't even have the script up. So.
But just to let you know, GLaDOS, I knew the cake was a lie. Rat-Man told me.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2018 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week is Weezer's in the Garage, She Blinded Me with Science as performed by William Shatner, and Fingertips by They Might Be Giants. All the songs I use are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you want to help out Nerd Pride, subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or whatever podcatcher you use, and write us a nice review, or write us a crappy review. Give us two middle fingers. It doesn't matter, as long as you put 5 stars on it. That's the thing that makes the difference. But if you want to do something super nice for the podcast, seriously, recommend it to your friends. If you're enjoying it, why wouldn't you spread the word and let other people enjoy it? Because word of mouth is my bread and butter, people. Remember, I'm always looking for you listeners to do my work for me, like Kyle did my work for me and got me a great fact for 226 for this episode. Send me questions and topics for the Podomatic. Watch out every week on the forums and Facebook for listener betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, like Kyle did, send that one to me too. Save me all of that grueling research. My contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be completely honest, the very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. Sign up, send me a message. We will hang out together. We'll become best friends in the world. We will have fun. And now it's time for listener betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, I go out to my forums and to Facebook and post up, hey guys, I am recording now. Anything that you post up, I will read off right at the end of the podcast, which is what I'm doing right now. So, this one, on Facebook, I said, I'm recording episode 226 with this week's guest, Aiden, Noah. Ask us anything here and we'll put it in the podcast. Also, Noah wants to know the scariest thing that ever happened to you when you were a little kid, like 6 or younger. So, first response is from Sarah Beth. And Sarah Beth says, the scariest thing that happened to me under 6 was at 2 years and 10 months, something truly horrifying happened. My little brother was born. Dun, dun, dun! I kid, mostly, is what she said.
Seriously, though, I don't remember the scariest thing. The mind. It is a very powerful thing indeed, but I have been told a story as an adult. When I was 5 and in kindergarten, a kid on the bus pulled half of my hair out, gave me insomnia for the next decade and a half. After that, my friend Rob sat with me every day until we moved to protect me. We are still friends.
Oh, wow. That is a great story. Yeah, terrible to happen to a kid, and I'm glad you don't remember it, because... man, that's terrible. So, next one from Sarah Beth is, oh wait, first, Noah, what's your scariest thing from when you were a little kid?
So, at camp, we were playing flashlight tag, and I was just running around, and I ended up at a parking lot next to the bathrooms. I didn't know where to go. My rationality took over me. I knew I had to find the roads. I knew which way the roads were. I just couldn't find the roads to them, not thinking about crossing the grass for some reason. So I just started crying out for help, and some lady came and took me He down to the road, to the place, and then we saw a bunch of my family members, like Bill, and she was like, "Hey, is this yours?" And they were like, "Yeah, sure."
Yeah, it was
they
literally.
They didn't give a crap about me.
Yeah, it was
and
literally.
Mom and Dad were out looking for me.
This woman, yeah, we were looking for him because the kids came back and were like, "Well, where's Noah?" "Oh, well, I don't know." So, all right, fine. So we went out looking. And so finally, this nice woman brings back this poor kid, tears in his eyes, and she's like, "You know, lost kid, does this belong to you?" And they're all like, you know, they weren't the ones out looking for him. So they're all sitting there with their beers going, "Oh, yeah, whatever, sure, thanks, yep." And the poor woman must have been baffled. Here's the got lost, crying kid, returns him home, and what, nobody seems grateful? It was an odd situation and very scary for Noah.
Thanks, relatives.
Exactly. Scariest thing that I can remember happening when I was a kid, was watching the Donnie and Marie show. And on Donnie and Marie, they had a huge puppet that came out. And it was like one of those Muppet style puppets that was, you know, had a full size person in the suit. So it's like 6 foot tall. And this thing had this giant mouth. And as part of the gag, it's standing next to a live human woman, this giant puppet, and at the end of the gag winds up picking her up and eating her, like just dumps her straight down his mouth and inside the suit, so it looks like he's swallowed her whole. And we lived in a little duplex back then, so I had to be 3 or 4 when we lived in New York there. And, I was just watching TV in our side of the duplex, and they were visiting their friends who lived on the other side of the duplex. So it was like literally just the other side of the wall. And, you know, we had the adjoining carport. So I walked on through and I was just bawling and scared to death. Cause, you know, here I was alone at home, quote unquote alone. And I had to explain what happened. And I remember them laughing about it. And I remember them trying to explain to me that it was like a cartoon, that it wasn't real and that nobody actually got hurt. And I remember all of that and I understood it, but it was still really frightening. I that was scary as all get out. So, all right, next one. Sarah Beth says, "Dr. Noah, tell me about an experiment that you would love to do, and what is your hypothesis about it?" Noah?
So, the best experiment I want to do is go see if the kid who says his dad works at Nintendo, see if his dad actually works at Nintendo. And I think, no.
Did that come from somewhere, or did you just make that up?
No, I know that there's a joke that kids are like, "My dad works at Nintendo, so you best not be mean to me." And so,
that's pretty good.
And to tell you the truth,
so wait. And so, just to clarify, so your hypothesis is no, he doesn't.
Yes.
See, that's very testable. I think, never mind. Just go ahead.
And, actually, I don't know what my favorite experiment what I'd love to do for an experiment. Cause really, there's thousands of things.
Uh-huh. Alright, one, this isn't really an experiment. This is just a science demonstration, but, I would love to have, a little bit of solid sodium and throw it in to some water. To watch what happens with it, because it's super cool. That's one that when I was a kid, and we talked about chemical reactions, and the first time a teacher threw a sliver of sodium into an aquarium full of water, and we watched it explode, it's pretty awesome. So I would love to recreate that, just because it's a really cool one. But the other experiment that I would love to do is I would love to raise up some sign language apes. So literally some, you know, get myself a half a dozen, 10 maybe, chimpanzees, teach them all sign language, and then release them into some protected preserve and let them just live out their lives and raise kids. And, you know, maybe you have to introduce some new chimps here and there and whatever, mix it up. But I would love to study the evolution of sign language in chimps over generations, because we've shown that they will teach it to other apes. And I would love to see the evolution of sign language for a chimp culture that doesn't have a whole lot of interference from humans. Because, yeah, if they're talking to humans, then they very specifically have a lot of signs that are useful for humans. The ones that humans can make with their very different hands and that are useful for getting things from humans. But I want to see how the chimps would do it if they have the sign language to use just for themselves. I would love to see how that works. And I don't know about the ethics of that, and certainly there's no one willing to fund a 100-year-long study of this nature, but God, it would be so cool. I would love to see that. Actually, I just realized the only thing that would make that chimpanzee experiment better is if they were all on fire.
Oh my goodness.
El mundo en llamas! Okay, so. Sorry.
That was terrible. By the way.
Let's move along.
Let's move on.
Next up is from Kaz. Kaz says, Noah. This time, I'm not adding the Noah. They actually used your name. Noah, you have one superpower, but are a villain. Now, tell us how Uncle Kyle thwarts your plans.
Actually, I think it would be a group of my dad, him, and some of the, and like the children as other people. And Uncle Kyle's just the comedic relief and doesn't really do much to the thing. But he accidentally kicks a button and it splashes water all over my doomsday device.
Oh, nice. That's very good. All right, I'll take that one. Also, do your best Lucas the Spider impression.
I am a spider. My name is Lucas. I want to be your friend right now.
I've never paid much attention to Lucas the Spider, so I'll have to watch and see if I can determine how accurate that is. But all right, thank you. I appreciate it. All right, and then it says done. And now we're going to go over to my forums, where there was nothing a moment ago, so I'm suspecting there's still nothing. But, you know, we gave it an extra 15 minutes. Let's see what happens. Nope, still nothing. So I will post up done. And you guys have been great. So this was an awesome show. Noah, you want to say goodbye?
Goodbye. Hey, Aiden, say goodbye. Goodbye, everyone.
Yeah, that's exactly what Aiden sounds like. It's like he's in the room with us.
I know.
Say goodbye, R2. Awesome. Even better. I love you guys. I'll see you next week. Thanks.